Welcome to What's Good Miami. My name is Alan Phillips. We are super excited today to have Wayne Boych here for the Miami Minds interview. I've been tracking him down for the last couple of weeks, and I finally had the opportunity to get him to sit in front of us and have a discussion about the future of Miami and the future of paddle. Wayne, it's awesome to have you here. You know, since we've been getting to know each other over the last year or so, I really, really enjoy learning from you. And you not only being a friend, but sort of a client sometimes and a mentor in certain ways. You've really amazed me in our interactions. So there probably isn't anyone I could really think of in Miami that I'd be more happy to sit down and have a conversation with. So the world can actually get to see the real Wayne Boych, the one I got exposed to. So
I feel like I don't have to answer any questions because it's all going to go downhill from here.
It won't get, I don't think it will, because I think that, I think it's pretty amazing to get exposed to the amazing life you've had. So let's start with the standard. What's your name and what do you do?
Well, my name is Wayne Boych, and, I do a little bit of everything. I was originally in the energy business, the form of energy, coal. Became a little bit more difficult, so partly out of fear and necessity, I got into some other businesses, starting with real estate, and opened up a family office about 10 years ago, and really have invested and participated in, you know, active businesses, hybrid type investments, and involvement in businesses, and certainly passive investments as well. And then obviously in the last 2+ years, I got involved in what was initially a passion of mine in paddle that has now become a little bit more than that. So that's been exciting.
Yeah. These guys over here were telling me they're big paddle people. And I told them they have the guru coming, the guru of paddle. So let me ask you a question. I kind of find it interesting about you as a human being. You seem to know everyone. That can't just be something that happens overnight. How did that occur that you just ended up kind of, you know, there's always someone else popping up, you know, whether it's Jimmy Butler or Andrew Schultz or whoever it may be, there's always someone in your ecosystem that kind of like jumps out. And they, by the way, not all known people, even if they're like, you know, random friends of yours who, you know, I went to high school with or something. There's just, it's kind of like if you're in Miami or you're in a certain social scene, it seems like you get, you know, touched by the Boych here and there.
I don't know what it is. I think it's my father's genes. You know, he was a very social man as well. And I kind of grew up watching that. And when I hear you say that, I kind of chuckle because, you know, when I was growing up, I was a tennis player, which is in part why I fell in love with paddle so quickly. I got to a point where I was good enough that my parents thought it was a good idea to go to homeschooling. And I was young.
Homeschooling?
I was like 11 years old. So there was a big debate, and I can remember it vividly as an 11-year-old just wanting to play tennis and have fun, as to whether or not it was the right decision for an 11-year-old to go to homeschooling. And back then it was even less prevalent than it is today. And one of the main reasons not to go to homeschool was, you know, social existence. Yeah. And it was obviously a well thought out comment. But I remember my father saying to that person, one thing I'm not worried about with my kid is his social skills. He's going to be a social person, whether he's homeschooled or not. So I look back on that as I've gotten older and, you know, I guess I just, you know, have a lot of the same traits and, you know, I love sports. I always have. And just kind of bump into people in weird ways. With Andrew Schultz as an example, I didn't know the guy. And then on New Year's Eve, a good buddy of mine, Noah Tepperberg.
He was my mentor growing up.
So we were at an event together and he's like, you have to meet Schultz, right? He loves Pat. I'm like, I'm on text with him. So I met him. And after 30 minutes, our wives were both, just laughing in our faces because 28 minutes of the 30 minutes was about paddle. He shares that passion that I do. And And quickly he became a captain of Reserve Cup, which was a month later. So these things happen quickly. The Jimmy Butler thing was very similar. We met at a dinner, and he liked paddle and knew about paddle, so he challenged me to a game of paddle. And I told him in front of 30 people there was a better chance I'd beat him in basketball than he could beat me in paddle. So with his confidence, he wanted to take that bet, and then he came and watched us play the next day, and he said he'd sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I feel like your life is almost like a real episode of like Barbershop, where like all the guys are sitting around talking, but it's
a lot
like
of
actually
talk.
Happening.
A lot of talk and fun.
A lot of talk, a lot of fun. One of the first times I met you was at your house when you were playing paddle in the back, and I walked in not knowing what to expect, and like all the guys are there, and then you're like, is that guy? But you told me once an interesting story about, I think, when you were getting into paddle, and you mentioned your dad, so I'm going to ask you about your dad. You mentioned this idea, like, that he said something to you when you were getting into the paddle journey about, like, this opportunity and why you made it such a big part of your life.
Yeah, I mean, not to go too deep into the paddle history, because I could talk forever about it, but it was 2013, 14, when I started to play. We put a court at our house in 2015 and started doing exhibitions 16, 17, 18. And it wasn't until we did a tournament in early 22 that I thought maybe this could be a business. And having discussions with people that were close to me, including my father at the time, you know, his comment to me was, you know, anything that you do that you've had passion in, you know, you really have been fortunate enough to have a lot of success. And when you describe it to me, you know, as it relates to taking you back to your youth, et cetera, it seems like such a unique, special opportunity that'll be in part legacy defining, in some of the same ways that some of your prior businesses have been, but also in different ways. And you have the opportunity to kind of help create a sport in the U.S. and given, you know, the attributes that come with it and the experience, that maybe I could be helpful in pushing the sport along a lot more quickly than most other people if I got behind it. And, you know, at that point, the discussion became centered around if I'm active and I'm involved and I'm going to be the, you know, the front leading person of it, as opposed to kind of behind the scenes, that'll entail things that in the past I generally didn't really do, which is be forward-leaning in the press, et cetera, because that would help the sport.
Yeah.
And I made the decision that was what I wanted to do, and obviously talked to my family about it, and with that we started Reserve.
Which is really interesting, because I feel like when most people, and there's a difference, when most people get ahead of something and put their face out, it's because they want the attention. I feel like in this case, the reason it works is because it's truly genuine and authentic. I think you told me, when was the first time you picked up a paddle racket, and like what clicked for you that day?
Well, when I first picked up a paddle racket, it was at a wedding in July of 2013. And I was amazed at how I kept hitting the overheads on top of the racket, because it's a little smaller than a tennis racket. Yeah. So that was comical. I hit like four overheads over the fence. But I also knew it was something that I could get decent at quickly. And I just loved the engagement of it. The fact that you're kind of together on a court that's only 33 feet wide. Doubles is very fun and engaging. And I could tell that people could pick up the sport very quickly, and this was well before the pickle phenomenon. And that was it. It was, hey, let's play, let's have fun. It wasn't about being a business, but it was about, wow, I would love to spend some of my time doing this. And back then, when I came back to Miami, there was basically no courts in the U.S. There's, you know, a couple courts in Miami, and we started to play, and that was how it started.
Can you, like, find one court in North?
Yeah, it was in North Miami. There was a couple courts at the time, and myself and like six tennis players started to play a lot, and we thought we got really good, and we said we'd go to Spain and check it out, and we didn't know anything about the tour or the pros or whatever, and it was just a much smaller game at that point, and we got to realize how good the pros really were and how much better than us they were, and we decided to start trying to bring them back to do exhibitions in Miami, and we started at my house in 2015-16, and then it kind of took from there.
So at what point did you realize it could be something bigger? Like almost, it's gone from, I think, you know, a seed of an idea to a sport to almost like a part of culture right now, where, you know, if you're in certain circles in New York, LA, London, very big in the Middle East, and then Miami is, you know, for lack of a better term, ground zero in the United States. This thing is really picking up a level of momentum where it doesn't only say something about you as a competitor, but it says something about you as a person.
Sure.
There's a little bit of a status and a joy that comes with being part of this paddle movement. When did you realize that was possible?
Yeah, listen, it's a good question. I didn't even think remotely about a business until 2019-20. The tour at the time in 2017 asked if I would partner in building it out in the U.S. And I said it just didn't feel like the right time. And I was engaged in so many other things. It just didn't make sense for a lot of reasons. And then in 2020-21, you know, through COVID, you could see people starting to play more. And the tour had started to gain a little bit of momentum. And there were rumors about another tour being started up that was well-financed and ready to take the sport to the next level. And at that time, I thought it was a good idea to do an event in Miami. And we did it. And that was February of 22. And I really started to think about, wow, this sport's starting to take in the Middle East and all over the world. It's not just a tour that's in Spain now, largely. It's a tour that's branching out to where, you know, going from 80% of the tournaments in Spain to now it's 25%. So you could see that coming, that movement coming, and you could see the interest from other countries and people getting into the game. And then I could see over time, you know, these events at my house became 200, 300, 400 people. People started to play.
You had 400 people at your house?
Yeah. A lot of fun people started to come to the house, but we made it like an event. It was cool.
And, ain't no party like a Wayne Boych party?
I mean, we one or two in the past. But you really could feel a little bit of momentum. But even with that, and when I started the company in late 22, there was 200 courts in the U.S., and there's 20,000 courts or something in Spain, right? So there's nobody really playing here. But that was part of the excitement, the opportunity. I really believed, as I said earlier, that we could move it quickly. But I didn't want it to be just about paddle clubs. Mm-hmm. But yet building out the clubs kind of build the foundation to what we're doing as a brand and reserve and all the, you know, the different verticals we have. And for us, just again, the passion of bringing the sport to the community and really thinking and betting that community would pick it up and become somewhat obsessed with it, because the health and wellness component of it, the community you build with it, the camaraderie, the competitiveness, the fact that women play nearly as much as men, the kids are now getting into it down here. You could see that. You could see where that would happen easily. You take kids, for example. My kid, you know, plays tennis, likes tennis. He's 8 years old. You know, all of a sudden he plays paddle. He hits it off the glass two times, and you're an eight-year-old kid. You think that's more exciting than playing tennis, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So you're like, wow, well, that could happen to hundreds and thousands of kids if you get them out there. So how do we do that as reserve, right? So you could see it, you could feel it. And, you know, again, it's very early. You're sitting there in the main cities to where you have some traction, leading with Miami, as you said. But it's going to take time, and it's going to take commitment, which we have. And, you know, we're excited to be a part of it.
So don't go up, Alex, go down. But the clubs are just a small portion of your vision, right? They're almost in a way like a temple or a proof point, mm-hmm. where people can see other people doing it and therefore they like it, and you're creating a great environment, almost like a boutique hotel for people to play in. But you're also cultivating the talent. You're bringing the talent here. You have Reserve Cup, which is amazing tournament that's growing and expanding. You have the merch, which obviously we could see as you are color coordinated today.
And the shoes.
Is a thing. But, you know, I'll be walking through airports and see the Reserve merch around, and it's the ultimate tribal identifier. You know, I'm one of them type of person. But what is this bigger vision that you're playing towards, and how does it maybe differentiate from the other people coming into the game?
First and foremost, it's the passion for the game. right? And starting the company, it had to start on the backs of the clubs, right? So we started with our first club in February 23, idyllic location in Miami, the epicenter of paddle up to that point. And, you know, we launched. And over the, you know, a little bit over 2 years since, we now have five clubs, three in Miami, two in New York. We're looking around constantly trying to find clubs that fit the reserve blueprint. So it starts with that. And those are the foundations of the business, right? One of the foundations of the business. Having the right pros, as you mentioned, the people that are working closely with you to grow the game, whether it be Juan Martin Diaz, who is largely regarded along with Bella as the GOATs of paddle, who was number one for 14 years in a row. He's an amazing person to move paddle in the U.S., not only because of the way he plays, but what he brings to the table. You know, our pros, they're best in class. We brought a lot of ex-professionals over from Spain that work with us at our clubs in reserve. They're very instrumental in growing the game at all levels with all different types of folks, as I said, from kids that are 8 years old to people that are 75 years old. But when I thought about the business and how to make me most excited about the prospects of the business, the thinking was, let's launch it as a paddle company, but also a brand that over time will go from being, you know, on the backs of paddle only, right, to something else. And the beauty of figuring out exactly what that something else becomes is very exciting to me. So we have, you know, the reserve clubs and wellness. We have reserve courts, in which we started a JV to roll out courts and build courts and sell courts to folks around the country and the world, which we're very excited about, and has done well over the first couple of years. We have Recruit, which is an agency we started to help bolster the careers of professionals in paddle, and we think that also puts us into the global ecosystem of paddle and people understanding about reserve a bit more. We call it Recruit. We obviously have the apparel brand, Reserve, that has really taken off very nicely, and like you said, we have this sort of cult following, and the only place you're buying our apparel now is at our clubs. So we're going to go online this year. We've been very cautious about how we launch, when we launch. It'll be later on in the year, and we're excited to see what it entails. But as we grow the business and get more internationally known, we would like to think that what we're doing at our clubs, which are very good numbers in terms of apparel, will translate into something that'll hopefully be special once we go online. We have exciting partnerships with two of the best players in the world. Half of the number one team, Arturo Coelho, he moved to Miami. It was a transformational moment in paddle, because up to that point, there's not one active professional player that trains anywhere but in Spain. So it was amazing. And to have the number one guy move is just not only for reserve, but for paddle, get him known more in the U.S., help him out with his brand in the U.S., was really a win-win. So we're excited about that. And we have a partnership with Ale Galan, who's part of the number two team in the world. Amazing man, amazing player, very well known in the international community as well. So obviously helps reserve get out more and more, you know, throughout the world, to help grow the brand and grow quickly. So we're really excited about all facets. You know, we're trying to tie it all together in somewhat of a meaningful way as quickly as we can, but it's that push-pull between trying to get there fast and doing it the right way we deal with every day, and we want to be smart.
It's interesting because I think there's a couple of observations. One, like, you will never sacrifice on quality, right? Which I think is, it's unusual for any business person because you're able to do it, but when it comes to the merch, for instance, the stuff you're wearing is the best stuff. You know, you're not wearing like a t-shirt from reserve. You're wearing the best t-shirt you can get that happens to be from reserve, right? You're wearing this every day. You wouldn't be wearing it if it wasn't the best quality. And when you walk into the clubs, the quality is excellent. The feeling is right. It's very luxurious, but not with attitude. You're still getting, you know, I said it like when I first took a lesson there, it was amazing to play paddle, but to be listening to like, you know, Drake or something like that over the speakers, because you're not used to associating racket sports with, you know, hip-hop culture or street culture. It's this really beautiful blend that right. you've created. And then at the same time, there is this very deep emotional connection that you have to the game, but you are who you are. And I can't help but always think about this, the scene in Casino where the guy wins a lot of money from the casino and then they ground his plane to keep him playing. And I feel like you're a big time player. And so you started playing and then you needed to play bigger and bigger and bigger. And now you're bringing the sport itself to the biggest consumer market in the world, which is pretty spectacular because, you know, there is a world where you could go after trying to get an NBA franchise or something like that, but you're trying to build an entire sport. I know you're a passionate, you know, Miami Heat fan too, because I've seen you at the game a couple of times. But like, what is that thought process behind like trying to actually build the sport as opposed to, you know, be another guy buying a franchise or something like that?
There's a lot of ways to look at it, right? One way to look at it, if you want to be completely economical about it and take away the passion and tennis background, and I love paddle and gotten to really love the pros and the community and all that. Economically, when you talk about what you're investing in paddle to do everything that we're discussing, you get nothing of a pro sports franchise. So you got to give a lot of credit to all these sports owners, for really either getting a bit lucky maybe and or understanding that it is the most rarest form of asset one can attain. And clearly there's always been somebody willing to buy it at a higher price. So, you look in 2025, the ability to buy into a sports franchise, we all can look
Celtics
and see what that
went for $6 billion.
So, that's $60 million a point. So, it's not a cheap game. And, being at the forefront and helping create, and being recognized as the leader of paddle in the U.S. and its growth is really humbling, for people to say. And it's, if you look at it straight economics, it's very efficient in that regard relative to your alternatives if you're a sports person. That part of it's easy, if you look at it and you're an avid sports fan or whatever. But when you attach to it the passion that I have for it and the fact that you really can't put a number on when you're sitting in Miami and, just every day, every week, you hear about, like you say, it's part of the culture, all right? And everybody wants to talk about how good they're playing. They won this, they lost that. I should have done this. My partner's fault. I need a new partner. My kid got into it. My kid's better than that kid. He's going to start playing tournaments. We're going to Spain. And that you obviously had a big part of that becoming a reality. And that's obviously it's great. It's fun to see. It's fun to hear about. And New York, it started with Miami. New York's the same, the same thing in a lot of ways. In that, there's not as many courts yet in the city, but our club, does very well. It's the only one in Manhattan. Paddle House has clubs as well in Brooklyn. They do very well. They're doing a really nice job. But we're collectively part of that discussion now in New York, right? And what's going on. So that's plenty for me. I feel lucky that I'm just in this position to be able to do what we're doing as a company. And we have a lot of great young people working with us at Reserve that are incredibly passionate and they do a great job. So for me to be now, I guess, unfortunately, fortunately, the elder statesman to a lot of folks. It's fun. It's great to be able to try and give them whatever I've learned over the years, whether it's business, relationships, et cetera, that make things happen. I love that, and I think that's also an honor and something that you're almost – it's incumbent upon those as they get older and more experienced and maybe have some success in their life to try and pass it on to the next generation, not only your family but the people around you. That wanna learn, and it certainly happened with me.
Legacy building.
So
last paddle question before we get into the Miami questions. People say paddle is the new golf. And some people like talk about it as like Reserve is almost like a modern day country club in a way, like an athletic country club, like athletics meet Soho House or something like that. What do you think of this evolution of the sport, and why do you think, you know, is it the timing, like what, like the amount of time it takes to play golf versus paddle, like where do you think paddle sits there, and where does reserve sit in that world of the modern country club?
I mean, it's a combination of events. Number one, golf's not going anywhere. We all know that, yeah. Right? People love their golf membership. They love hanging out, different type of community.
Yeah.
But there's no question that the timing is very good for whether it's paddle or pickle or whatever that has some level of, you know, athleticism. Well, not that golf doesn't, it certainly does. But the health and wellness portion of paddle is very real. You know, and to go to play paddle for an hour or 2 hours and hang out is a different value proposition to golf. But certainly the way people are living this generation from last, it's becoming even more appealing. And I think, you know, the community we build, the people that are at our clubs, as you mentioned earlier, there's a very, you know, very cool vibe. You know, there's a lot of, to people that come to our clubs, there's a networking component to it that I think, you know, yeah. People are drawn to. But sure, health and wellness, you know, you're out there for an hour or two, you're not playing golf for 4 hours. It just depends on the person, but there's certainly going to be people out there that it's valuable to be able to do the same thing in less time. And obviously there's a little bit more of a health and wellness component to it. And we're certainly capitalizing on that.
I think it's fucking awesome, man. Honestly, I think
are we
it's super
to
cool.
Say that here?
Yeah, I'm allowed to say whatever I want. That's the beauty of this. I can do whatever the fuck I want. That's kind of why I do it.
I like
so,
that.
Honestly, I think it's incredible. I think you're an incredible person. So you recently opened a flagship club, which is kind of the culmination of everything that you've done in the world of the Reserve clubs and the Reserve brand to date. And that's the club at Solomia, which is in North Miami. I actually had the pleasure of being involved in the inception of Solomia when I was working with Turnberry. And it's incredible to see how that property has developed. And I feel like Reserve is almost the crown jewel of what's going on up there. And it's incredible to see all the social posts that have been going up as you've opened, and all these people who probably never thought of going to that area are now, you know, flocking to yeah. that location on a daily basis to be part of, you know, tournaments and go to the Pura Vida there, which is pretty impressive as well. It's a pretty large Pura Vida. And as you know, I'm a Pura Vida addict. So tell us a little bit about how that came about and what it means for the evolution of Reserve.
I have to start with, you know, it must be a good place when my wife is driving 30 minutes to play paddle there 5 days a week with her friends.
Yeah.
Religiously.
And you didn't expect that necessarily.
And I did not expect that. She has obviously fortunate to have a court at her house, and she loves to play, but she goes with her friends. She enjoys it. And listen, we wanted to build, again, coming from the tennis background, we wanted to build a place in the U.S. that would be the mecca of paddle for years to come. And in talking to both the LaFracs and the Sofers, they understood the vision early, which we have to give them credit for, because two and a half years ago when I started talking about it, I was just starting the company. They didn't even have a club yet. We were basically talking
They have
about
been
it.
Known to have visions of things.
They're not too bad, that's for sure. Multi-generational.
Aventura, and, Queens,
they've done a great job from generation to generation. So they obviously, they saw it, probably with a little bit of selling on my part. And it went from, hey, you have to have a pickle club here with a paddle court, to, all right, I get it, let's go for it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we created what we feel will be the best club in the United States, if not the world, for paddle for many years to come. It's purpose-built for paddle, both indoor, outdoor, anchored with a Pura Vida, as you said, which is one of their largest, if not their largest, restaurants in their portfolio. And it's really a hit amongst all demographics. So kids love it, women love it, men love it, and of course, the best pro in the world now trains there. So now you're getting calls, we're getting calls from many of the top pros because it's just the light bulb went off. Well, if I'm training in Madrid or I'm training in Barcelona, why wouldn't I entertain at least moving to Miami? You know, maybe it helps me launch my brand. I get new sponsors. Miami's the biggest market in the world. So you have this club that really, it made it all possible, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have the 35-foot ceilings.
Yeah, could you explain what it means to have that?
So in paddle, you want to have 28-foot ceilings. You know, that's a minimum if you want to be able to play at a high level.
Nobody else has that, right?
Maybe one other club. I'm not positive if they have it or not. But it's very important to people that come if they play above a certain level. That does not mean that lower height ceilings are not good for paddle. I applaud the folks here that have indoor facilities that may be a little under 28 feet because it helps get people into the game. And that's great for paddle. So I'm very supportive of those folks, and I'm friendly with all of them. Having said that, when you want to grow a sport and you want to bring the professionals in, or you want to have professional tournaments or high-rated amateur tournaments, you have to have ceiling heights that are above a certain level because the lob is the most important part of the game, arguably. So we obviously had that in mind, and we built, you know, 35-foot plus ceilings that really cater to great paddle. And the lighting and the way the windows are and everything is really... We had consultation from the best player in the world that was coming in 6 months before saying, what about this? What about that?
Yeah.
And we have consultation from the gentleman who works for us, Juan Martin, who's the go-to paddle. He tells us this, tells us that. And they certainly made impactful suggestions along the way that helped us make, you know, again, this great club. So it's come out great. We opened it in January. And we're excited to also implement this summer training programs. That'll be summer programs, again, first of its kind for paddle in the United States. Mm. We're going to have the Reserve Academy by Juan Martin Diaz, which we think will, you know, globally bring more people to the U.S. to try paddle in the U.S. and train.
Just
so with
people
our
understand, that means it's like the Michael Jordan.
It's like
summer
the Michael
camp.
Jordan Academy in paddle.
The Michael Jordan.
You know, Federer Academy. This is a gentleman who we were looking at the stats for fun. He won 170 of his 191 finals.
Wow.
So you're similar stuff.
And couldn't be a nicer human being.
Great guy, and he's our chief paddle officer, which is a new term in business that some people are using. So, but yeah, we're very excited about the club and the partnership we have with the Sofers and the Fracks, and we think it'll really cater to the growth of paddle at all levels.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, definitely people should check it out. If you really love paddle and you've been playing wherever you've been playing, getting to Solomia is kind of like where you can measure where you're at in the game. And
like paddle and you come through Miami or live in Miami, you should make the drive.
You also happen to be a very meaningful part of the Miami community and what's happened in Miami. So I want to jump into a couple of quick questions because I only know we have limited time to ask you about Miami. So how long have you lived in Miami?
On and off my whole life since I was 5 years old.
Amazing.
So a lot.
And where do you live?
I live in Miami Beach.
And what is your morning routine?
My morning routine, it is pretty
people
much
want to know, bro. People
it's pretty
know.
Much the same every morning. It's wake up at 5, my mother's genes in that regard, no alarm, and usually read the whatever the news is of the day, put on the TV, have an espresso or two, wait for my kids to come down, which is usually 2 hours after I get up.
So 5 to 7 is your time?
My time. One of my businesses, I deal with Asia a good amount, so usually take that time to do a little bit of that. And as I said, catch up on what's going on, you know, in the world, which is certainly exciting, you know, nowadays. I don't know if exciting is the right term, but a lot going on. And then I start my day.
How do you work out every day?
I try to. But my timings are unpredictable because of work. If I have the time, I do mornings. I try and do between 7 and 8.
So no afternoon paddle games?
Paddle, yes, that's very unpredictable. But paddle, again, you know, if I'm playing and healthy and don't have a shoulder that's a little messed up right now, it's usually 4 or 5 days a week at one of the clubs or at my house.
How do you take your coffee?
Espresso, nothing in it.
What's a hidden gem in Miami that more people should know about?
I used to say paddle, but now too many people know about it. Listen, Miami, I could talk for hours about. It's amazing to see what's happened. And there's so many incredible restaurants that people, you know, some people don't even know about. And then just the way that it's expanded Miami, I couldn't even tell you one hidden gem. I'm just thrilled to be a part of it. And I love to tell a lot of my friends that were short Miami how wrong they were as they all move here.
Yeah, it's the best.
Great feeling.
It really is, no?
It's a great feeling.
He's a true diplomat, this guy. That's why everyone likes him. What do you love the most about Miami?
What do I love the most about Miami? The energy. It's got a very unique energy. And I think it's partly the diversity of all the folks living in Miami. Obviously, the climate's great. And I just think you have a certain level of just, you know, the people here, you never know what you're going to get. And you feel like it's very international. I love the culture that Miami's created, right? Uh-huh. And it's a great sports town. And obviously now that it's the Mecca of paddle, that's good as well. Mecca of paddle in the U.S., I should say. Oh, we will keep it that way, though, that's for sure.
Let's just finish up these quick Q&A questions here. So what's one piece of advice you'd give your younger self?
I mean, there's so many. How much time do you have? I would say I've been pretty patient and measured, you know, in business throughout my life. But when you're younger, even with relatively good patience, I would tell my younger self, you know, be calm and comfortable with the unknown. And understand and always have the conviction in where you're heading and belief that you're going to get there. And it's easy to say, but whenever you've been in enough deals and enough businesses, no matter how good they sound at the beginning, there's always going to be challenges and issues and days when you wake up and you think, is this really worth it? But the older you get, I find, the more that you just, that's a fleeting moment and you pass through it and you just keep grinding through. And you're not always going to be right. You're going to have successes and failures within businesses that are ultimately successful. But patience and stay the course.
Get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And how do you define your success?
I would say, you know, when you're young and you're in business, you're I'll speak for myself, you're very into the economic gains. And wanting to be successful, having that fire in the belly, you know, drives you to that economic success. And then I think once you've attained some of that, you start to think about, at least in my case, how do you impact others and their lives? And how do you teach others, you know, about your mistakes and your pitfalls and your failures and then obviously your successes. And I would define success as I said earlier, being able to teach and give others, you know, all the knowledge and power and experience that you have to them, to help them along their growth. And if people say, hey, you know, forget about the economics or anything else, he really helped me. He was a good guy to me. He was instrumental. He taught me, you know, that's enough for me.
That's a great answer. What do you believe that most people don't?
What do I believe that most people don't?
That maybe most other people don't. Or what's something you believe deeply?
Let's start with, you know, paddle's the best sport in the world. You know, most people don't think that.
Yeah.
What do I believe that most people don't?
Or just something you believe deeply that you think about on a daily basis.
Relationships they're the largest part, in my view, in a lot of ways to success in business, you know, and obviously in life. And if you handle yourself in the right way and, you know, you try and, you know, handle yourself with humility and be good to other people, you know, you get paid back, you know, tenfold in life. And to do it in, like you say, an authentic way as opposed to, you know, being staged, people see that. And over time, you know, you develop a deep sense of loyalty from people that's very, very gratifying, comforting, and you know, it kind of bolsters everything that you believe inherently, and you just try and live your life that way. And I think it pays off.
It's funny because I was telling them a story when you were on your way here, Alex and Sophia, who work with me. And it's a little embarrassing, but I'm going to tell it anyway, just because it speaks to what
you've
been
saying. Make sure we don't edit this out.
No, don't edit it out. I don't want you to. But I was, first of all, I believe very deeply that life is measured in the depth of your relationships. And sometimes I'm successful at that, sometimes I'm not. But I do remember the first time I met you when I was working at Reef. And I think I went to lunch with you and Danny. Mm-hmm. It was about sponsoring your first thing. And you invited me over to the house, and then you were like, oh, come to a basketball game, whatever. And I was like, this guy is really fucking cool. I was like, why is he being so nice to me? Like, he doesn't need my attention or energy right now. Like, why is he being so kind? And I think as I got to know you, I said it again to you. I was like, wow, it's very unusual that when someone doesn't necessarily need you or need to be nice to you, we become accustomed to people acting differently around us when they need things from us at different levels. Yeah. And for you to have that humility and generosity of spirit, I call it emotional generosity, it made me want to do for you in 10x in any way I could, just because I was like, this is the kind of guy I believe in. I believe in what you're doing, what you're trying to create. But I almost feel a little embarrassed myself for feeling that way.
But that's the
because
point.
That's the way I deal with society.
That's the point. I can vividly remember, my parents, telling me at a young age that, just the basics that we all know about, how to live, how to look people in the eye, how to deal with people. And then it transitioned to business and ended up being instilled in me that, if somebody has a good feeling with you, they will look for the one reason to do a deal with you. If somebody doesn't like you, they could be 100 reasons why to do a deal with you. They could find the one reason why not to do the deal with you. And that's the business side of it. And it's so true. I've seen it so many times throughout my life where folks have really helped me in a tough time and they didn't have to. Did it pay off for them too? Yes. I always tried to make it, equitable. Mm-hmm. But if you didn't have those relationships, it wouldn't be there. And I tried to do the same thing in life. And I've been really fortunate to have amazing friends that have been friends, for a long time. And, very, very blessed in that regard.
Cool. So last question, what's your happy place?
I mean, is that an obvious one? Where do you think it is? I guess I should say at home.
I've seen you with your kids, man. I've seen you with your wife and kids.
You really can't replace hitting a good overhead to beat somebody's ass that's younger than you that thinks they're better than you now. But I would say happy place would be hanging with my family, my kids. Obviously, Cynthia and I are having an amazing time with an 11, 8, and 4-year-old, and every day is a new day. It's very cool to see my kids playing paddle. My son particularly has taken a liking to it, so it feels like I'm living feels like I'm gonna quickly turn into my father when I was 10. Uh-huh. When he gets to 10 years old, with a different sport but similarities. I love being on the court. I think it's fun and still amazing to play, and hopefully I can at a high level for the next few years. We'll see, but those are very fun places for me to be, and I feel very lucky.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm so thankful that you blessed us with this interview today. You're a good man. I can't wait to see where you head in the future. And I hope that for the spirit of this place that we love, Miami, that you're here for many years to come and you continue to create on this incredible canvas in this incredible city. Thank you for all you're doing, and look forward to collaborating for many years to come. Thank you again.
Pleasure. I appreciate it, Alan. It's been a good time.
Amazing. Thanks. All right.